Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is the Two Mats for the week ending Friday, the 29th of September. A palace chronicler for the digital age. What's that all about, Matt?
It's about Michael Wolff.
It is.
The legendary biographer of Donald Trump, and now author of a fine book on the decline and fall of the Murdoch empire called The Fall.
Yes, we've just had a long chat with him.
We have, and I think it was really interesting, and I hope that listeners enjoy it as much as we did.
Well, I loved all the... Obviously, he's got really great insight into the political dynamics and Murdoch's role in that, but I did love the kind of personal insights, not least how Murdoch goes about choosing his lunch.
That was a fascinating detail I'd never heard before, but it was so sort of emblematic of the whole state of play.
It really was. And he came over as very forthcoming and a decent guy who has clearly got to know Murdoch better than 99.999% of the people in the world.
Yes.
And I think people will find it fascinating.
It really is inside the room stuff.
Yeah, and you set it up, so thank you for that.
Pleasure.
Big up to you for that. What are we going to call the episode?
I think we should just go for, you know, really oblique, the Michael Wolff interview.
Won't that confuse people? Okay, all right.
I think we should never underestimate your listeners, Matt.
We'll go with it. All right, so folks, this is The Two Mats, episode 15, the Michael Wolff interview.
Enjoy. So, Michael Wolff, welcome to The Two Mats, and thank you very much for doing this interview pegged to the publication of your excellent book, The Fall, The End of the Murdoch Empire. I'm holding it up for people watching on YouTube. It's out now, and it's excellent. Wanted to get straight into it, which is to ask, this is a book about Murdoch and Fox, but it seems to me really a parable of politics and culture and technology in the 2020s. It's a much broader story. It's about, you know, family facing the mortality of the 92-year-old patriarch Rupert and a cash-generating cable TV company, you know, that's arguably been the most powerful voice in US political media, but also facing its own mortality as the digital world makes its inroads into the conservative ecosphere. I just wonder, what made you go back, having written a book on Murdoch already 14 or 15 years ago, what made you go back to him as a biography subject?
Well, these things kind of connected to each other. Trump is kind of inexorably bound to Fox and therefore Murdoch. You know, Murdoch, who, you know, for many years was the leading right-wing bugaboo, is actually now a kind of middle-of-the-road conservative, a conservative conservative, so to speak. He likes his politicians to be standard issue. He's certainly not interested in culture wars. He's certainly not interested in identity politics. He's a low taxes, what's good for business, conservative guy. Give me Margaret Thatcher, give me Ronald Reagan. And then here he is, and he started this this news network, which was really never supposed to be an out and out political voice. It was supposed to be a tabloid news, let's build up an audience network, like television is, or like it was before Fox. And then Roger Ailes had his own agenda and his own craft that he was pursuing, and that started to produce enormous profits. So for Murdoch, it was like, okay, well, I don't even really have to think too much about this. And Fox went on in its way. And then one day, literally, it was like one day Rupert Murdoch woke up, and that was partly because Roger Ailes was pushed out by Rupert's sons because of sexual harassment stuff. And then because Donald Trump became the president of the United States, something that even a few months before, probably the day before, Rupert Murdoch could not have imagined. And suddenly he was in a new world. And it was in every possible way his world, because he was now in charge of Fox News. And I think that he found that being in charge of it didn't matter. Fox News was its own monster by this time, as Donald Trump was its own monster. Which sort of made Rupert Murdoch Dr. Frankenstein, but not even, because he didn't really even create it. And you can kind of see him as just standing there, gobsmacked, confused. What is going on around me? And I think that was the thought bubble over Rupert's head.
And do you think he's worked out what was going on now? And is this part of the reason that he's at least ostensibly step back, but has he kind of thought, do you know what, this game has moved on beyond me now?
No, I doubt that. I don't think he has the capacity to be that objective about himself. I think that he probably thinks people, it's really hard to defend the perception, and it's more than a perception, the fact of how old I am. So I have to get a cover story for this. I'm not sure that he has resolved what's happened. I think that he thinks, and he has thought over the past year, I can do something about this. And this is partly prompted by the fact that he hates Donald Trump, has always hated Donald Trump. January 6th was incomprehensible to him. The fact that Donald Trump might become president again is something that not only can't live with, but he thinks he can do something about. And on top of that, his children are saying, remember your legacy, your legacy, your legacy. And that was all part of what caused him to invent the candidacy of Ron DeSantis. And that is really Murdoch's bubble, Fox's bubble. And of course, we've seen how well that has gone. So, I think kind of tragic irony is kind of crushing him at this point.
And we're recording this on the day after the second Republican debate, which again, like the first, had a slightly different dynamic. But again, it was Hamlet without the prince, or Hamlet without the former president, wasn't it? Even DeSantis's attempt to say that Trump was missing in action felt lame.
Yeah, no complaint, and it was an overt snub to Fox. Fox, which elected Trump and became his a virtual adjunct to his White House, is now at war with Fox. And again, in Trump fashion, a kind of gleeful war.
Michael, one thing we will talk more about the political dynamic with Murdoch, because it is his body, it's his corpus. But I want to know, what is he like? You've spent so much time with this guy, probably longer than some of his kids have in the last few years. And I just wonder, what's he like as a guy? How does he interact with people? What does he eat for lunch? What are his work habits?
Well, I can tell you what he eats for lunch. He goes to the to the dining room at Fox, or he used to do this, and it was even funnier at the commissary in Hollywood. And he spends a long time looking at the menu every day, kind of studying it, and then he always orders the grilled chicken.
And has he got a sense of humor?
He has a mild sense of humor sometimes. Yeah. He's actually kind of good. I mean, kind of great to be with. He's a nice guy. He listens or tries to listen. He's tries to respond. He has great manners. Courtly in his own way. Mild. I mean, I would say that's the sort of the word that kind of best describes him. And if you talk to him about what he's interested in, he's quite animated, and he's interested mostly in media gossip. So if you have that for him, he's kind of childlike almost. But one of the issues is that he's phenomenally inarticulate, and he mumbles his way through everything. The Australian accent still remains after all these years really thick, and so you often lose this stuff. I mean, I have 100 or more hours of tape, which you really have to work to decipher. But having said that, he's not like, the impatience of other super rich guys, the looking over your shoulder, the wondering why you're here, is absent. So it's, again, there is a lot to like about Rupert Murdoch.
And it sounds completely other to Logan Roy, which of course everybody thinks is the kind of stage embodiment of him, but the opposite.
Absolutely the opposite. I mean, the other thing about Murdoch is he's completely conflict averse. He really does not want to engage at that level with anyone. And I've kind of often thought that he built this empire to be the proxy for everything he might want to be but was not.
I noticed, though, that he knows enough about Logan Roy, you record in the book, to describe the character Logan Roy as that asshole, which rather puts the lie to the idea that they don't watch Succession.
Yeah, no, I remember once after he got divorced from his second wife Anna, and she got married, he would refer to the fact that she married some old guy.
Yeah, making way for an older man. Michael, on the question of Succession, which really does come, not with a small s, lowercase s, obviously the book is infused with that sibling quarrel between the four siblings that were beneficiaries of the trust and got $2 billion each when a large part of Murdoch's assets were sold off. Reading your book, the one who strikes me as easily the most qualified to take over is Elizabeth.
I think no question. I mean, she's the most accomplished media executive of her sibling generation, and she's probably the most normal, is that the word? Balanced, rational, nicest, probably. Yes.
And also, she has business chops, doesn't she?
Yes, no, certainly accomplished. Built a significant company and independently, made money independently from the $2 billion that she got in the family disbursement. But But of course, she's a girl.
But he also, I was kind of tripping onto his relationship with Rebecca Brooks, of course, who he, by all accounts, dotes on and considers to be, you know, a wonderful human being and all capable, and has done everything he can at any stage to pull her back into empowerment. How does that square?
I think it squares with her enormous loyalty and devotion. Unlike his children, who are, you know, difficult, who are independent enough to largely, or at least some of them, to say what he does not want to hear. Rebecca says what he wants to hear.
Right.
That's a kind of interesting career study of how to mold yourself to the powers that you have to mold yourself to succeed.
Right.
And James Murdoch, Michael, is a very, vividly portrayed character in the book, and very captious and self-regarding, but also, crucially, has a sort of almost Napoleonic vision of his own capacity to change the world. And he has this mission you
describe. 2 billion will do that, I suppose.
I guess it will, yeah. I'm unlikely to discover it. But he says he wants to turn Fox into a force for good. I mean, isn't that a bit like saying a fossil fuel company can be turned into a force for emissions reduction? I mean, it just makes no business sense, as often as he says it.
Makes absolutely no business sense. I mean, but, if you have $2 billion in your pocket, it does not have to make business sense. With $2 billion in your pocket, you are no longer an economic human being. Yes. And I think, I mean, you could say, okay, I can take Fox News, and if I'm willing to sacrifice, $1.5 billion in profits, I could turn this into what I want. And why not? He might say. If I'm sacrificing $1 billion or $1.5 billion of, by the way, my shareholders' money for the good of the world, why not? And I think that's probably his view. Now he may be, and probably is, Napoleonic enough to say, no, I don't have to say, I can do this without sacrificing that kind of money. I can make a force for good, and I can, because I can't imagine life without the money flowing in. I will also make it a incredibly, its own profit machine. I don't know.
He also seems to have a weirdly fractious relationship with his father, doesn't he? I think, like he's quite shouty with his dad. Is there something?
Yeah, no, has always been. Yeah.
Hectic,
I mean, the Alistair Campbell diaries from the famous meeting when Blair went to the Murdochs on bended knee, are very funny, as he describes James, and
that's right.
The guy can't shut up, that Godfather line about never talk in front of outsiders.
Anyway,
I don't know what's got into you, Santino. Yeah.
Yes.
But which leaves Lachlan, and upon whom the, at least provisionally, and I think underlined provisionally, the succession has fallen, who comes across as something of an empty vessel, wanting to please his father, cement his father's legacy, but not really having a vision of the future, and crucially, an absentee landlord a lot of the time in Australia.
No, extraordinary. I mean, Lachlan is a really puzzling figure. And I think for people in the family too, what does Lachlan want? But I think the answer is probably not this. And he holds this job perhaps mostly because his brother wants it more. So what does that add up to except that his mission is to please his father? I mean, he sees his father as an historic individual, not unreasonably, and has accepted his place in his shadow.
It's interesting because when on our last episode, Matt and I were talking about how, in fact, now it's Elon Musk's world, it's Mark Zuckerberg's world, it's a world in which, you know, Joe Rogan can get a multiple of viewers more than Fox has ever dreamt of. And, you know, as you mentioned in the book, the conservative ecosphere is being filled with new entrants like Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire and so on. So is there a way, whoever takes over, whatever sort of corporate structure emerges after Murdoch's death, is there a way for the Murdoch dynasty to recover its previous global power in a digital world, or are we looking at an end of empire?
No. I mean, we are. I mean, let's remember fundamentally. You know, in 2017, they made the decision. You know, for a couple of reasons, they made the decision to sell the lion's share of it. So, and that went to. The Disney company. I mean, it's probably a brilliant deal. They sold at the top of the market, but it was an exit. You're not going to create that empire again. Could you create some kind of business? Yet to be seen. I mean, effectively, what the business that exists now is a rump business. The assets they have, they only have them because Disney wouldn't take them, either for regulatory reasons or because Disney, of course, did not want Fox News's toxicity. It is unclear what this company becomes. It's unclear what it should become. It's unclear what it can become, and it's unclear what its controlling shareholders or want it to become, perhaps, and that's perhaps most of all the important point.
Michael, one thing that's of particular interest in the UK is what would happen, do you think, to the newspapers that Rupert Murdoch, so clearly cherished and invested literally so much, both emotionally and financially, into? I don't imagine Lachlan cares about them that much. What do you think might happen?
It's a funny thing that question even gets asked. You know, and it gets asked partly because, you know, Rupert Murdoch has been such a dependable owner and he's been around for so long that he becomes a kind of fixed star here. And to imagine him not being there is almost impossible. But on the other hand, it's very obvious what happens. They get sold. You know, there's no one who wants them, you know, and. Last year, Lachlan had this this cockamamie scheme, and it was sort of Lachlan and Rupert, but it was hard to tell whose scheme it was, to join the television company Fox and with the newspaper company News. And that kind of proposal to Fox shareholders was, hey, here's a good idea. Let's buy a newspaper company. And of course, this went nowhere. And the nature, there's a sort of interesting subtext here in which most deals that these companies do simply need the assent of the Murdochs. But this particular deal, by its nature, needed the consent of all the shareholders, which was never going to happen. So it was another kind of indication of management disarray that they even proposed it. And the deal almost immediately fell apart.
It's interesting that, you know, you mentioned it in those terms. There was a time when the UK was very much the heart of the Murdoch Empire. And now in the book, and you vividly present it, as it's really a far-flung outpost, you know, representing his past, a past he cherishes, but the past. And so specifically, it's interesting, his titles in the UK are backing Rishi Sunak, who is set, if the polls are to be believed, for a defeat. But does it now matter in the Murdoch world?
No, I don't. I don't think it does, and I don't think he's paying much attention to it. And I'm sure this is Rebecca's decision.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Can we talk about you for a little bit? Because I'm fascinated by one, and I know you've faced this question many times, but maybe our listeners haven't heard the answer. Why the hell anyone would agree to spend a lot of time with Michael Wolff to have you then, over an extended period, lay open their lives so brilliantly, but transparently and at times brutally, as you do? Why do they say yes? And then once they've said yes, how do you then go about gaining their confidence, spending time with them? What's your process in deconstructing their lives as you do?
Well, I'm kind of like Rupert. I'm a polite guy. I don't try to exert myself. It's their story. I'm there just to look and listen. I don't personally have much of a political agenda, and I'm not that kind of a reporter. I'm literally just a set of eyes and ears.
But you have a brilliant instinct. You have a brilliant instinct, Michael, for understanding when that bit of gold dust drops, and you have a great talent for magnifying those telling moments that become literally headlines around the world. It must be a dangerous game for somebody to say, "Yes, I'll get Michael Wolff in to do my biography."
Well, I'm fortunate in that most of the people I write about don't read books or probably read much of anything. So they know that I know that the people they know, and they've sort of seen me before. Because sometimes I think of myself that I'm sort of like a palace chronicler. I'm just a guy around who is vaguely recognizable. So you slip in. I think Joan Didion was asked a sort of similar question. She said, "Well, I'm very small. Yeah. People don't really notice me." And I think that's. That's part of the job of what I do, keeping my mouth shut. Right. This is not about me. I'm a good listener. Everybody wants someone to listen to them. So the real answer is here is I have no idea. but it seems to keep working. So my view is do nothing different.
And who would be next on your hit list, or who is on your next list?
I don't know. It's kind of random. We're in this world which I've kind of become, strongly vested in, the Trump age. I think this remains clearly the dominant story of our time. This is where we are. This is our fate. So some piece of that probably I go to next, I would imagine.
I remember when you finished the third Trump book, there was a sense of, at least a sense provisionally of an ending. Are you surprised by the extent to which he has bounced back from what looked like a, not just the disaster of January the 6th and so on, but the midterms and now 91 criminal indictments, that he is still so resolutely and implacably determined to get back, that he is so dominant on the American scene? Does that surprise you at all, Michael?
Yeah, I think it surprises everybody. I mean, I think it's gobsmacking. But then you kind of remember, you know, what is one of Trump's key talents? Maybe his central talent, and that is always to make himself a winner, even when he's a loser.
There's a great line in the book where you quote Sean Hannity, who is perhaps the Fox presenter most close to Trump, and a great confidant of his, as you explained vividly. And Hannity, after the defeat in 2020, is saying, oh, this is great, 8 more years of Donald Trump, because we can have the Mar-a-Lago exile, which we've had in all its sort of medieval grotesquery, and then, in Hannity's view, the return to the White House. And it's being played out as seasons of a television series, isn't it?
Completely. I mean, and it's that thing. I mean, I think we're just at this moment, and I don't think we're actually at the moment yet, of really coming face to face with the fact that he could be the president again. This has gone from the incredible to the fantastical to the unimaginable to the plausible at this point.
I mean, when your first book on Trump, Fire and Fury, came out, it made a huge impact because it revealed the lack of method and the chaos within the Trump White House in such sort of detail and with authority. And it really did shift the goalposts on our understanding of Trump. It's very hard to predict chaos, but if he wins, what should we expect, if anything at all, from the second term? What distinguishes it from the first?
You know, I would say probably little. Trump is a simple machine. He wants what he wants. He wants attention. So I don't know. You know, and he has no. I mean, remember, here's a man with no particular agenda beyond attention for himself. No particular goals. No particular policy points of view. None of the things, and this kind of marks the difficulty in understanding Trump. None of the things which anyone else in a political role would want, or has been trained to want, or understands that they might need to want. None of that exists for Trump. So it is just him. I'm back. It will be like that. I'm back. And I want to remind you every day that I'm back and I'm Donald Trump.
You describe in some detail the, certainly to the outside world, out of the blue, sacking of Tucker Carlson. It's an extraordinary and fascinating character and, you know, massive smash hit presenter of Fox. And you talk about his presidential ambitions. Seems unlikely, unless Trump falls, that Carlson would step forward for 2024. But do you think Carlson will one day run for president?
You know, I mean, these are, as they say, this is a long time in American politics. But I think if you thought about the profile, the future political profile, the future, Donald Trump has provided a radical change in the paradigm of who can be president and who people want to be president. And what that comes down to, of course, is a television star. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Tucker has... It's kind of two things. He's a television star, and he's probably been the one person who's been able to provide a cogent intellectual framework, as bananas as it sometimes also seems, to the whole MAGA world.
Michael, just as we wrap up, I just wonder, I don't know how much attention you pay to UK politics, but I wondered if you do, what are your views on what's happening on our sceptred isle, and how does it look from across the pond, the state of British politics?
Well, I think it's a highly relevant point to make for a British audience, that it doesn't look from across the pond, that nobody here is interested in British politics. It's not a subject. It doesn't cross anybody's media or anybody's mind, which says something about British politics, of course, and about British politicians. You know, Tony Blair, when Tony Blair was prime minister, and I would say if you took a poll, probably most Americans or a good part of Americans believe he is still prime minister. You know, he courted that American consciousness, and nobody has done that since. Even you know, Boris Johnson, who you might think would have, you know, where is stardom? How do you create the greatest stardom in the U.S.? I would have thought that was appealing.
It's hard to imagine Keir Starmer or Rishi Sunak sitting on the balcony and being applauded by both houses of Congress after the president speaks well of him, isn't it? Just isn't something that is likely to happen.
That's an interesting and maybe important subtext. Beyond that, I am actually interested, not least of all because I visit with Matt as often as I can, and he tells me what to think.
This is not true.
But I don't. It seems like it's up in the air. Like a change is like the wind is blowing. So I'm eager to see.
Very discouraging, because we were all told during the Brexit referendum that America was absolutely falling over itself to get into bed with Britain and wanted to go and sail forth across the Atlantic with, you know, in a buccaneering spirit,
global
of trade, and this would be our future. But what you're saying is that most Americans don't give a shit.
Yeah, no, and actually, I have the distinction of saying, and this was probably 3 weeks before the Brexit vote, maybe 2 weeks. I was interviewing Donald Trump, and I asked him about his feelings about Brexit, and he drew a complete and utter blank.
Oh my God!
So I told him what Brexit is.
Great. Well, that's wonderful. Well, thank you for doing that in the first place.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm sure it helped. And but thank you for doing this.
Best of luck with a marvelous book, The Fall, The End of the Murdoch Empire by Michael Wolff.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, Michael.
Thanks for having me, and I hope to see you both soon.
See you very soon.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on really good form, and there's lots to chew over there.
Yeah, you know him.
I know him quite well, and he's a fascinating journalist.
Yeah.
He really is.
And I think what he said about just being a nice guy, it came through.
He is a nice guy.
Yeah.
He is a nice guy.
Well, listeners, let us know what you thought of the Michael Wolff interview, and if you have any questions around that or anything else going on in the world. Not much going on in the world, but if perchance you are worried about Suella Braverman or Rishi Sunak or HS2 or anything at all.
Climate change.
Any of the current disasters du jour, then get in touch with us. We're going to do a Q&A special starting in a couple of weeks, and the email for your questions is tmats@tnepublishing.co.uk. That's the number 2mats@tnepublishing.co.uk. And a quick reminder for our special deal for all new subscribers, we still have stock of Rory Stewart's amazing new book, Politics on the Edge, and you'll get a free copy worth £22 with every new subscription from just £1 a week. Go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats, and there's a link in the show notes. Thanks as ever to the third Matt, producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. And until next week,
it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else.
Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.